I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Labor Day weekend, three long days off. You know what that means, a chance to see more films. So, what movies do I want to see this weekend? A documentary about the power couple known as Hollywood's Secret Weapons? The drama where architecture is as much a character as the people? How about a murder mystery on a Wyoming reservation? With so many choices, what's a radio host to do? Turn to the independent foreign and documentary film critics. That's what. I'll ask which flicks are must-see and which are better left unviewed. Good thing it's a long weekend, because there's a lot to see out there. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Just in time for your Labor Day weekend, we've got a lot of good movies to talk about today, and I mean a lot. We're going to launch right in, but first I'll introduce our critics. Once again, they are Cindy Haynes, the one-time film professor. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you very much,
Steve. KCUR's own Steve Walker. Steven.
Good morning.
Bob Butler reviews film for the Kansas City Star. You can read his reviews 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at butlercinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
God, I'm tired thinking about it.
Yeah.
Let's get right to it first with some films opening today, Cindy Haynes. Let's go to I Do Until I Don't. This is an ensemble comedy featuring three couples who struggle with what it means to be married.
It was written and directed and stars Lake Bell, and she was responsible for a very interesting, fun film. I guess it was last year, In a Word. Is the title of it. She played a voice coach who was competing for jobs with her father, and very well done. This time, she lampoons reality TV, documentary filmmaking, and romantic comedies. She stars as Alice, whose husband, played by Ed Helms, two of them sell blinds, and they're further along in their relationship, I think, than the other two couples, who are being followed around by a documentary filmmaker from England. And her contention is that marriage should be a contract whereby you're married for 7 years, and after 7 years you can either renew the contract or it's broken, because she feels like, you know, there are too many problems later on in married life that need to be addressed that aren't. So
this is not a concept that'll get people talking, that's for sure.
Well, it did in the 50s when it was called The 7 Year Itch with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. What'd you think of the film?
I found it entertaining, a little uneven. Ed Helms is in it, Mary Steenburgen, Paul Reiser, he's quite good, Amber Heard, Wyatt Cenac, they are the characters of the three couples who are being followed by this filmmaker.
Yeah,
there's loose connections between all the characters, but it doesn't fail to be filled with cliches that you see coming from 2 miles away.
Yikes.
I didn't laugh much. I think Lake Bell's other movie, In a World, was better. It's kind of TV-ish, sitcom-y.
You'd expect that much with Ed Helms from
The Hangover, The Office, yeah.
The Office, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's fine, and Steenburgen and Paul Reiser are married, and they're fine, but it's all I can give it is a fine.
Not a lot of excitement here about this film. What's the clip we have here, Cindy?
We have Alice, played by Lake Bell, who is explaining about this documentary filmmaker coming into their lives.
You know, Noah and I have been approached to participate in this sort of avant-garde documentary study on marriage. Does anybody want a refill?
We have?
Yes. It's this award-winning British filmmaker who's helming the piece, and I just couldn't turn down the opportunity to support her artistic vision.
Oh, we're doing that too.
Mm. No, I don't think it's probably a different thing.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I haven't heard about this yet.
Yeah.
Right, the lady, she came by the workshop and she begged us to do it because of our open relationship.
No. Yeah. What was her name? Lillian?
No, it was Gideon.
Gideon.
Her name's Vivian Prudek.
Yes.
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 When is right. It was Vivian.
When did she?
Yeah. When did this come about? I haven't heard.
When did she?
No,
come
I think I deserve to know whatever avant-garde sex games you signed us up for.
It's not a game.
Avant-garde.
Well, that sounds like Ed Helms playing Ed Helms. I mean, is that the other character from The Office who was in that film? No.
Don't know. Don't know. Steve Carell? No.
We can do maybe sort of mixed reviews for I Do Until I Don't. Maybe we can do better with other films that are coming out this weekend. Let's go to Menasha. This is an ultra-Orthodox Jewish widower and father of a young son who struggles to maintain custody of his child, Bob.
One of the great things about movies is its ability to plunk you down in an environment you're not aware of or have little knowledge of and really let it sink into your bones a bit. Mm-hmm. Menasha, the main character, Menasha, he's played by a man named Menasha Luskin, and in fact, the movie is kind of autobiographical in this way. He's a bumbling bear of a loser. He's part of the Hasidic community, but he's a square peg in a world full of round holes. He just doesn't quite fit. He works as a grocery store clerk in one of these little New York City, narrow grocery places. He mops up, he carries boxes, but if he has half a chance to get into a theological discussion with anybody, he'll blow it all off so he can do that. He's a man who wants to be a pious Jew. He's got a problem. His wife died. His rabbi says no child can be raised in a household without a woman. And so they've taken his son and given him to his late wife's brother and his wife. Mm. So the man is not allowed to raise his own son. Now, what makes this film interesting, it's by a guy named Joshua Weinstein, is that it isn't a negative portrayal of Hasidic life and culture. This guy wants to be part of this community, but his circumstances have kind of, in a way, pushed him to the edges. One thing I want to mention, the film itself is kind of an amazing backstory. The director doesn't speak Yiddish. It's entirely in Yiddish. Perhaps the first film in the last 50 years to be shot in the Yiddish language. It used to be big in the 30s, There was a huge Yiddish theater community and lots of Yiddish movies. It had to be shot in part in secret because the Hasidic community disapproved so strongly of popular entertainment. A lot of the people playing Hasidic characters are not Hasidic because they would not be allowed to do it. Nevertheless, the authenticity of this thing is pretty astounding.
Well, it's rare, too, when you use non-professional actors in a film such as this, and it's very, very effective. And I agree with you, Bob, that being provided an insight into this community has real value, and I think the film was well done.
So it was effective at putting you in a place where you'd never been before, sounds like, yeah.
I liked it a lot, and Bob's right. It just takes you into this community. It's in Brooklyn, by the way, and if I stumbled into a similar community near Williamsburg a couple years ago, and I felt, boy, like a fish out of water. Are you kidding me?
The
signs were all in Yiddish.
The first 10 minutes of this film show him working in his grocery, and I assumed this was set in Israel. It wasn't until a car goes by with New York plates that I go, wait a minute.
And the debates they have about this community, the progress, they speak of, there's a rabbi who's too progressive because he lets women drive, and other people in the community find that appalling. At one point, someone says, You need to remarry. However, when you do, the stepmother can't even touch the son, is the less progressive kind of thinking that we hear about. It's a fascinating movie.
Well, apparently, depending on who your rabbi is, there's quite a range of tolerance for different things.
And there are some amusing scenes, too, with sort of the 10-minute dating. What's that? Speed dating.
Here's this poor guy. He's fat. He's balding. He's bearded. He almost never dresses properly. He's always in his shirt sleeves, which the formal Hasidic people find really ridiculous.
And he's only in his 30s.
Is he a non-professional actor, by the way?
Yes.
Well, he is, but
This
guy, Menasha Luskin, has a series of YouTube videos which are like silent comedy skits that he has done. And I think that's where they got a hold of him. But this is his real story. He has a son being raised by family members because he's not allowed to.
I'm looking at my notes from when I watched it I said it's not fair to say this is a world frozen in time because that's my secular view.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and that's the great thing about it. Like I say, this is not a hatchet job on a religious sect that has rather makes demands on its people. It's about a guy who, he's there, he loves his people, but he's got this problem.
But he loves his son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that film is Menasha. Three thumbs up from your critics.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
At the 3 p.m. screening at the Tivoli this Sunday, Aaron Martin, who grew up in Topeka and wrote the film score for Menasha, will do a Q&A. So if you want to get a little insight into a rather special movie, I'm sure that's it. 3 o'clock Sunday at the Tivoli.
Okay. Yeah. We have a quick phone call here from Rick from Washington, D.C. Rick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. My question is for Mrs. Haynes. Mrs. Haynes, I have followed your reviews since you lived in El Paso, Texas. And I know what a great eye you have for great film. And, you know, frankly, your review of I Do Until I Don't doesn't appeal. That is, you make the film not appeal, which is fine with me. But I was wondering if you have a really a different sort of Labor Day weekend recommendation that might be a little more entertaining.
Yes, we do. We're covering 13 films this morning, and we have some really good ones coming up, and we'll be sure to mention those.
Okay. Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's move on to Columbus. This film is about a young man traveling to Columbus, Indiana, known for its modernist buildings, where where his estranged Korean father is in a coma while trying to come to terms with their relationship. He meets a very bright 20-year-old who refuses to pursue a life because she feels compelled to take care of her mother, a recovering drug addict, Steve Walker.
Boy, that's a mouthful, Steve.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. This movie is beautiful. Number one,
visual
to look
lockup.
At. Columbus, Indiana is not a huge town. It's a college town, but it's home to some of the modernist architecture masterpieces that Eero Saarinen designed, from a church where the cross is embedded in the front of the building off-center. His eye was always about asymmetry. And this young lady wants to be an architecture guide. She's in love with the architecture in her town, but she's not even gone to college yet. So she's kind of struggling with, how do I pursue my love when I'm taking care of my mom, who's on and off meth? She meets John Cho, who's a very well-known Asian American actor.
Who did the Harold and Kumar comedy, series, which is a far cry from this.
Yeah, and his father collapses in the very first scene. Parker Posey is his assistant, I believe. And he was there in town to do a lecture on architecture. But he comes back to America to kind of take care of him. And John Cho and this young lady meet and kind of bond over buildings. There's a lot of scenes of them talking in front of some of these masterpieces of architecture. It's very low-key, but it's really beautiful, and I appreciate its intelligence about buildings aren't just buildings.
I had some mixed feelings about this film because it could have been a stage production, I felt. Visually, it was pretty limiting, although it was directed by a video artist called Coconato, and I'm not familiar with his
he
work.
He actually does a lot of the supplemental material on Criterion Collection DVD releases of classic films.
Oh, does
really?
He?
That's his main gig.
Huh.
Well, I'll be darned. Anyway.
Yeah.
They talk about architecture as a healing art, and you kind of get it in these two characters' love of describing why buildings look the way they do, why they're situated where they are.
Worth a road trip to go.
Yeah, you got three things going on here. You've got a tentative love story, never really becomes anything because there's a big age difference. You've got a coming of age story of a young woman trying to decide if she's going to leave home and go to college or not. You've got this whole business about, can art and architecture change lives?
One of the things I saw in this film, though, was the relationship between children and their parents.
A lot of that.
And there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for the two young characters to talk about how they feel about their lives that they've dedicated to their parents. And
there's not a lot of car chases, not a lot of action. It's pretty cerebral. Mm-hmm. But it's enjoyable.
But it worked.
It worked for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all three of you thought it worked. Yeah.
It's okay. Playing at Screenland Armor.
Okay, so the last two films, Menasha and Columbus, both getting strong thumbs up from the critics here. Let's grab one more before a break here, Bob Butler. This film is titled The Vault. It's about estranged sisters robbing a bank that is, in fact, a house of horrors.
Yeah, you got to give them credit at least for their genre blending efforts. This is like Dog Day Afternoon meets The Fog by John Carpenter.
That's true.
A bunch of crooks led by two women. That's the kind of interesting thing. Francesca Eastwood, who is Clint's daughter, and Tamron Manning, whom you may know from Orange is the New Black. They are robbing this bank on behalf of their little brother, who's deep in debt to gangsters. We find out that the bank was robbed originally 40 years earlier. We get most of this information from a clerk, a bank guy played by James Franco. And little by little, we come to realize that there's more than money in the vault.
Hmm.
All right. So what you got is a bank robbery movie and a horror movie,
right,
butting heads here. I'm not going to tell you it's great. I'm going to tell you it's mildly amusing and diverting. Any, you guys want to chip in here?
It's got some energy.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
And it's filthy screenplay, and it's really violent.
Filthy meaning language.
Language, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had a lot of fun just watching James Franco.
Because he's always fun to watch.
But,
yeah,
you know, I think he played this with a wink and a smile.
Well, especially when you get that, you know, sixth sense twist at the end, and you go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We do have a clip.
Heavily censored.
Yeah, these are the two sisters. Well, they're basically talking about what they're going to do next. They're trapped by police in this bank.
No lies. Short answers. What the f*** is down there?
I swear to God, I don't know.
Did you set us up?
No.
You f***ing set us up?
No.
Who the f*** is down there? Do not f***ing lie to me!
Please, I don't want you to get upset and hurt anyone. You promised that you wouldn't hurt anyone if I helped you.
You're lying.
No.
You're lying.
No.
Who's calling?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's from The Vault. What kind of actress is Francesca Eastwood?
She's tolerable, from what I can tell.
Yeah. She's all right. Tamron Manning is
she's all right.
She's very memorable as on Orange is the New Black, and she's pretty much the same character
here. But she's very well cast.
She's pretty good at playing psychos now.
Yeah.
Okay. That's from The Vault here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our survey of some of the most interesting independent and foreign films now showing here in Kansas City. We'll get to Patty Cakes, Lemon, The Trip to Spain, The Only Living Boy in New York, and hopefully a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's program, we learned about the new documentary on the Vietnam War coming to PBS and found out how sex, race, and gender affect pop music. Find those conversations online at kcur.org and on the NPR One app. We're taking a break for Labor Day on Monday, but we'll return on Tuesday when Mayor James and KC Public School Superintendent Mark Bedell will join us to discuss the latest effort to find alternatives to school suspensions, a big issue in some school districts in our listening area. Well, this hour we're talking about the latest and most interesting films showing in area screens with Steve Walker, Cindy Haynes, and Bob Butler. Let's scoot on down the trail here and go to Patty Cakes, Steve Walker. It's about a white suburban girl aspiring to be a rapper.
It is, and it stars a thrilling new star named Danielle McDonald, who is from Australia, which shocks me to read that later because her Jersey accent is flawless. And as she is an aspiring rapper, she's got so much raw talent, both as an actress and a rapper. Rap is, of course, by its nature, very fast, and you'll just be shocked how well she does. She has an alcoholic mother who's played by Bridget Everett. Some may know from Amy Schumer's show. She's an outrageous cabaret artist in New York and from Manhattan, Kansas. Grew up there. So she's trying to establish this rap career, can't keep a job. Life is really kind of beating her down, and she has a friend who's from India that is her kind of cohort, and then they meet an African-American man who's a musician, and they form their own kind of troupe, and based on their initials, it becomes PB&J. And I'm going to stop there because I think it starts kind of uncertainly, kind of fits and starts at first, but it has a huge payoff.
It has a big payoff. You know what this reminded me of? An old Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney, "Hey kids, let's put on a show" movie, because you get these underdogs who band together and end up putting together a fantastic rap band.
There's a couple reveals towards the end of just Patty's look, for one. She also goes by Killa P, by the way. It's something else. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a good, very, very good night.
That's interesting. What's the clip?
The clip is a rap showdown. She's overweight and has always picked on by guys in the neighborhood, her fellow rappers in the neighborhood in Brooklyn, in Jersey. I'm sorry. And they're about to have like a showdown on the sidewalk.
This is from Patty Cakes.
They call a bitch Cassidy, I'm the left-hand skid. I got that platinum voice, you got that poison pen. They call us Gundam Rose, Gundam Rose, Gundam Rose, Killa P going. It's the Romeo remix. Come on, let's get it.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope. Patty and Jerry, we will be legendary from the bottom like sodomy. Game up missionary. I'm in my own trap as I flip the world to birdie. My verse is full of curses because I'm stuck in dirty Jersey. Let's move to New York City.
Yep.
We'll make a couple millies with that shit up 50-50.
Yep.
I'll get my left titty and a kidney just to cross the shitty river prison tunnel. Come on, Jerry, singing with me.
You know what? This is a huge audience pleaser. When I saw this, the crowd just went nuts.
Really?
You don't have to like rap.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I saw it yesterday at a theater I won't name, and I was the only one in the theater.
Yeah.
Wow. So
again, a strong recommendation for this film. It's titled
Came out of Sundance with huge buzz, and Fox Searchlight paid a lot of money for it.
Okay. Patty Cakes is the name of that film, and people should go see it, everybody here is saying. Okay, let's go to The Trip to Spain. This is about a British bickering buddy, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, embarking on a culinary road trip through Spain. I don't know about these guys.
What a way to earn a living.
Yeah.
It's a great premise, but they
great
just...
Great premise, you're right.
For three movies?
But they wear it out.
They wear it out.
Okay, this is the movie you want to get out of the heat or whatever and just sit down and
go
look
to Spain.
At beautiful scenery and beautiful food. It's fun. But these guys, now they're trying to interject these concerns about getting older and mortality. And these dueling impressions just go on way, way, way too long. They're famous for doing Michael Caine and Mick Jagger and all these other Brits, and a lot of voices I didn't even recognize. But anyway, this is the third episode. There was one set in England, the other one was in Italy, and this is the latest set in beautiful Spain.
And we have a clip here.
Yes, doing the Mick Jagger battle.
This is from The Trip to Spain, the buddy film.
I have a young family. For a man of my age, my kids are young.
Yeah. Yeah, how old's your wife?
43.
You just got those kids in, squeeze them in quick then?
Yeah. I'm not going the full Mick Jagger and having them at... He's having another one at 72.
Wow, that's daft, isn't it?
Ever met him?
I have.
I was at a party.
Yeah.
I was leaving.
Yeah.
And I heard from the balcony...
Yeah.
Rob!
Hey, Rob!
He didn't do the full, but no. And I looked up, and he went, "Don't throw those bloody spears at me." I said, "What?" He goes, "Don't throw those bloody spears at me."
Yeah, No.
He was doing Michael Caine.
I know. What you find is that he speaks like, sometimes it's sort of like that, sort of, but it's actually quite posh. And sometimes he's quite sort of, you can see that it's quite, actually, you've got that sort of public school thing going on, you know, and you get sort of deep like that. But you've got the old sort of peacock thing, you know.
Okay, lots of dueling quips.
Well, and I laughed out loud a couple times. But you could see here in the clip, that's not even a very good Mick Jagger imitation, really. Yeah.
Yeah. It should get an award, though, for best use of camera on a drone. The shots of Spain.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Glorious.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the best independent films showing on area screens. And at the end of our show, we'll sort of cut through all this chatter and have each critic pick their favorite three films, the ones they would recommend for this long Labor Day weekend coming up here. Let's move on here to The Only Living Boy in New York, Steve Walker. It's a directionless college graduate's life is upended when he begins an affair with his father's mistress.
He does. It's directed by Mark Webb, who did some Spider-Man big movies, and 500 Days of Summer was his big indie. This kid's kind of lost in the world. He's looking for a higher purpose, and then he spots his father, Pierce Brosnan, having a tete-a-tete with Kate Beckinsale, who is not his mother. His mother is Cynthia Nixon, who gives yet another great performance.
We were high in her last performance.
But this kid is not very well cast. He's callow, his character is, and so is he. I mean, it's not a performance I felt anything for. I didn't care about any of these characters except Nixon. And it just felt like faux Woody Allen to me. Set in New York City.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. I do.
Not a whole lot to recommend this one. Okay.
No.
We do have a clip here from The Only Living Boy in New York.
It's Callum Turner's the young man asking his father's mistress, Kate Beckinsale, how they met. How did she meet his dad?
Johanna.
Yeah, I'm Johanna.
Okay, Johanna. How long have you been f***ing my father?
Is that kind of vulgarity entirely necessary?
What kind of vulgarity would you prefer?
A little bit over a year.
Why are you even seeing him? He's married.
He is married.
Do you work with him?
Sometimes. I'm a freelance editor, so I work for all the houses.
Do you love him?
Define love, Thomas.
Do you think that you're going to marry him? Is that the plan? You think you're going to steal him away from my mother?
How do you know your mother isn't giving him to me?
Not a moment of it rings true for me.
Ooh, okay. The Only Living Boy in New York. You might want to skip that one. Let's move on to Brigsby Bear, Bob Butler. Brigsby Bear Adventures is a children's television program produced for an audience of one, a boy whose life is changed forever when the show abruptly ends.
I ended up loving this movie, and it started out, and I was going, I don't know, I've seen this before. We're all familiar with the Holy Innocent, the Peter Sellers in Being There, Johnny Depp in Scissorhands, Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix, people who are more or less mature when they're thrown into society, and they have no idea how to deal with it. In this case, you've got Kyle Mooney of the Saturday Night Live. He is raised in a bomb shelter by his quote-unquote mom and dad. Dad is played by Mark Hamill. He's now in his mid-20s. He's been led to believe that the outside world is poisoned. And then one day the police come and inform him that he was kidnapped as a baby and they're going to return him to his real family. The trauma is that every week for the last 30 years, his father has come home with a brand new VHS recording of an episode of a TV series called Brigsby Bear. The kid lives on Brigsby Bear. It's all he knows about the world is this. And Brigsby Bear is like this. He's like Doctor Who in a bear costume. He travels through time and space and has adventures with arch villains and all this stuff. The kid is heartbroken. There will never be another Brigsby Bear episode. The father, it turns out, was shooting him in an abandoned warehouse somewhere with out-of-work actors and cheesy special effects. What happens is that his mania, the kid's mania for Brigsby Bear, it starts extending to those around him, and they end up making, like, the closing episode. The TV series that never had the final episode, he's making it of Brigsby Bear. We have a clip here. Greg Kinnear plays the cop who helps rescue him and is on the case. And he's also an aspiring actor. He raids the property room, gets the Brigsby Bear costume and some of the props, and brings them to the kids so they can go ahead and make this movie.
Let's listen to this clip from Brigsby Bear.
Sounds like the great chimes of Eno.
Oh, does it? Do you want to answer the door?
James! Just the man I was looking for.
Wait, where's all your soldier stuff?
Huh? I'm off duty right now. Now look, there's no way I could get you everything on that list, all right? But forensics does have more evidence than they know what to do with, so I figured they wouldn't miss a couple items, like
the Sordis crystal!
That's what I thought.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. You guys tear into me now.
Well, no, I didn't care for the movie. But your comparisons of other things like Being There and Kimmy Schmidt make a lot of sense. But I didn't get that from watching the film in real time.
Well, it never
occurred to me.
He's got this whole entire world in his head full of arcane, bizarre words and characters that have no... You know, that come from a TV show that never existed. He's the only person who's ever seen it.
And at the same time, Bob, he's this kind of man-child who really exists in the world, millions of them, who were not raised in a bomb shelter.
They were raised by their computer.
As infants, right. So I just was like, whatever.
There's some big names in this film. Claire Danes, Andy Samberg, Greg Kinnear. You've mentioned Greg. How much do they help?
Kinnear a lot. The other two, not so much. Just basically elaborate walk-ons.
Yeah.
But, you know, by the time it was over, I was rooting for this guy in his silly little movie.
I was just glad it was over.
Okay.
All right. I think we have a mixed call here.
Very much of a mixed call on Brigsby Bear. Okay. Let's leave that one at that. Let's move on to Good Time. Steve, this is a bank robbery goes awry here.
It is. It stars Robert Pattinson, who has done amazing things with his career since the Twilight franchise, as has Kristen Stewart. They have grown up and proved that they really can act. He plays this kid in New York who has a brother who is deaf and mentally challenged, who is his buddy, and he kind of looks out after. Well, he ropes him into robbing a bank, and things just kind of spiral.
Everything goes wrong.
From there.
Absolutely everything.
The movie is kind of filmed like in one day, and then the night, and then the next morning. It's very propulsive. It's very film noir in a way. Mm-hmm. The color is really interesting and neon and violent. And it was directed by Josh and Benny Safdie, who are brothers, and Ben, in fact, plays the deaf brother. I was captivated by it pretty much.
I was too. I think it's a very contemporary film. I think it's fresh. It's intriguing. It's very violent. Be forewarned. But I think Pattinson did a terrific job.
He really does. And we've got a clip of him and his brother walking down the street, having just robbed the bank and realizing there's cops on the street.
This is from Good Time.
Just keep your head down. I'm gonna pull back off of this. Just don't say anything, all right?
Okay.
Don't look at them. Don't be scared.
All right.
Let me do all the talking.
Hey, fellas, where are we going? Can I talk to you for a minute? First of all, could you take your hoodie off for me?
Wait, what did we do wrong?
No,
hey, you with the black sweatshirt.
Yo, my man, turn around.
He's all right. We didn't do anything.
Whoa, get back here.
Okay. Things are going awry,
yeah.
As we
yeah,
said,
it's,
right
it's
there.
Yeah, it's an experience. It's like an immersive experience in this 24 hours in this screw-up's life, really.
Hmm. So,
Yes, I do recommend it.
Yeah. Anybody else want to offer? Would you go see it, Cindy?
Yeah.
If you can handle the violence,
yeah.
Be forewarned, as you said. Okay. Again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're running through the latest independent films showing on area screens here. Here's an interesting one, Harold and Lillian. This is a Hollywood love story. Cindy Walker, for almost 50 years, Harold Michelson, a storyboard artist and production designer, and his wife Lillian, a film researcher, were known as a Hollywood power couple. Odds are you've never even heard of them.
This is on my three to see.
Ah.
If you enjoy movies at all.
About movies, right?
Go see this film, because the insight that you're provided about art direction and about research for films is absolutely fascinating, told through the lives of this married couple.
And here's the thing that kills me. Even if he had been an accountant and she had been a short order waitress, their marriage, their love affair was so strong that it still would have been a fantastic story.
Hmm. And there's so much more to it. It's not just a dry introduction to this world of magical movie making.
Who were they? Put them on the map for us.
How about some of the movies they worked on? Yes. The Graduate, The Birds, Spartacus,
Ten Commandments,
The Deer Hunter, Ten Commandments, Fiddler on the Roof. They had an impact on hundreds of movies, how they look. The scene in The Birds, the famous, the crows are gathering on the jungle gym behind Tippi Hedren. That was his storyboarding. He drew that exactly as Hitchcock filmed it.
And a storyboarded film, it's like a comic book. You have panels with what's going on. So it gives the cinematographer some direction. It gives the director new ideas as to how to shoot a scene.
Harold, for The Graduate, came up with the idea of shooting Benjamin Braddock through the archway of Anne Bancroft's thigh and lower leg. Remember that triangle and you see him? He drew that. They filmed it as is. And then one of his storyboarding colleague says, this is why directors burn all the storyboards. They don't want people to know that the greatest visual ideas in their movies were invented by some guy working on a board somewhere.
It's an interesting idea and an argument, yeah.
And they were so well respected. Danny DeVito's interviewed Francis Ford Coppola. There's a lot of insight into Coppola's career. Several weeks back, we recommended Score, which is about creating music for the movies. This is a great companion piece, and it'll help you appreciate movies even more after you've seen it.
You wonder why we haven't heard of these people up until
now. Well, they're largely uncredited.
Mm-hmm. Uncredited.
Well, that's what Mel Brooks said.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If you've got 1,000 credits at the end of a movie and you have one line that says storyboard artist,
That's about it.
That's all you're going to get.
Right, and they would be far down the list. But as this clip demonstrates, Lillian talks about how she came up with researching undergarments for Fiddler on the Roof.
So a researcher will try to keep a film accurate in terms of costumes and sets and automobiles and those sort of things. And so she's quite critical in helping create.
She actually had
films.
A library, which over the course of several decades jumped from studio to studio, trying to keep a home somewhere.
Because producers didn't think what they were doing was all that important, all that valuable.
And the clip we have here, Cindy?
Yes, Lillian is talking how she did some research for the film Fiddler on the Roof.
When I was working on Fiddler on the Roof, I was still at Greystone. There was this song, Matchmaker, Matchmaker. And they said, well, we don't know how to make these underpants. So I said, well, I don't have any pictures of that. Nobody took pictures of Jewish girls' underwear in the 1890s or 90s. They said, well, what are we going to put on there? It has to be right. And of course, everything has to be right. So I sit on the bench at Fairfax and Beverly, which is a Jewish section. And I sit there and little old ladies are sitting right by me, and I start talking about, I have to get pictures of this for certain projects. And does anybody remember what you wore in those days? Because they were of that age. One little old lady says, you stay here. I'm going to my apartment, and I'm going to cut you out a pattern, because we had to sew all our underwear.
Oh, wow.
That's just great. And this movie's chock full of great film clips, too.
Right after her comments, then you see that scene in Fiddler on the Roof where all the
young three girls are laying on the bed singing Matchmaker in their underwear.
Right.
But you're thinking, okay, what's so important about that? But it lends an authenticity to a film in a way that couldn't be done otherwise.
Oh, that's great. That film, Harold and Lillian, a Hollywood love story.
And it's showing at the Tivoli.
Big thumbs up for that one. Well, I hold in my hands the final two films. We have run through a whole host of them here today.
Right.
And we're getting down towards the end here. Let's go to one of them I've seen, Wind River, and the one we're going to talk about now is Ingrid Goes West, Steve Walker. It's about an unbalanced young woman who becomes obsessed with a social media celebrity.
And the fact that she's played by Aubrey Plaza, who we've talked about last month for her weird movie, The Little Hours. She's really good at being really nuts. And she burns all her bridges in her hometown and goes to L.A. to try to track down this Instagram star played by Elizabeth Olsen. And she fakes for a while that she actually knows her. She, from her Instagram feed, she knows what restaurants she eats at. She knows what stores she shops at.
It's very scary, yes.
And but it's hilarious, too. In a stalking movie, it would be one thing. But this is a very different kind of tone. And then they end up meeting. Well, she steals her dog. And then Plaza steals Olsen's dog and then shows up once she knows there's a reward, and they become friends and they bond and for a while, and then Plaza's true neuroses are revealed.
Her brother is suspicious of her motives.
Yeah. It's very smart. I loved every minute of it. It's
no
on
kidding.
My three to see this week, and it was last week when it opened. It's really good.
It's both compelling, but it's also creepy. I mean,
I didn't get creeped.
In the opening scene, it's a wedding. Aubrey Plaza shows up, sprays mace in the bride's face. You go, what's going on? Well, it turns out that she'd been following the wedding preparations on Instagram and was insulted at not being invited, even though she'd never met the couple being married.
Wow.
She just showed up to assault the bride.
And she maces Aubrey
Plaza's Aubrey Plaza's character is someone who, this is why it wasn't creepy to me, but just sad. Is an outcast who's burned her bridges with other friends, other towns, and is just trying to seek some inclusion and validation in a world that's all about, you know, 6-second gifts.
But at the same time, you can't shake the memory of single white female. There's always the implied violence lurking beneath. You know, what if someone pushes her just a little too far in the wrong direction?
And I should point out that Elizabeth Olsen is in both of the films we're talking about here at the end of our show here today. Go ahead.
And two little pieces of trivia here. O'Shea Jackson Jr., who was the son of Ice Cube and was in Straight Out of Compton, plays a part in this film. He's very good. Wyatt Russell, son of Kurt Russell.
And Goldie
plays Taylor's husband in the film, and he does a good job.
The next generation is coming aboard.
That's
here.
Right.
What's the clip we
the
have
clip
from
The clip we
Angry
have
Goes
is a
West.
Quick Aubrey Plaza's at a restaurant where she knows Elizabeth Olsen's character eats, and this waiter it opens the clip with a parody of L.A. restaurants.
What's your biggest emotional wound?
What?
It's our question of the day.
Oh.
Mine's actually my relationship with my dad.
I'm good, thanks.
All right. Well, in that case, welcome to Grateful Kitchen. My name's Eden. How can I nourish you today?
You know, I'm actually meeting a friend for lunch here. Have you seen her?
Oh, yeah, Taylor Sloan. Yeah. She comes in all the time.
I know.
She was actually here like an hour ago. You said you're meeting her for lunch, or?
Oh, God, I must have gotten the time wrong. So stupid. Do you remember what she ordered?
That's from Ingrid
Goes
West.
This may make my top 10 of the year. We'll see how the year unfolds.
It's on my C-3, but it's showing at the Armor, the Alamo, and the Plaza. And go see it soon if you're intrigued by what we have to say about it, because it's one of those small independent films that won't last on screens very long.
Okay, our final film today, Wind River, Bob Butler. It's a murder mystery set on a remote Indian reservation in Wyoming. I liked it.
Yeah, well, Taylor Sheridan, he had a great couple of years. He wrote the screenplays for Sicario and Hell or High Water. He now writes and directs Wind River. I think he's sort of the new poet laureate of the modern American West. I have to admit that as much as I like Wind River, I don't think it's as good as those other two movies, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Sure.
An Indian girl, an 18-year-old Arapaho girl, runs for 3 miles at night through a fierce Wyoming blizzard, outrunning something, and freezes to death. Her body is found by Jeremy Renner's character, who works for the Forest Service shooting predators that are preying on cattle, wolves, mountain lions, that sort of thing. Before long, he's going to be chasing a different kind of predator, trying to find out why this girl died the way she did. He's teamed up with a FBI agent, played by Elizabeth Olsen, who is as unprepared for this as he is prepared. I mean, here's a guy that knows he knows survival in the wilderness inside out. She shows up without even a pair of long johns. She's from Florida, for crying out loud. And here she is in the middle of Wyoming winter. But they bond and they get to work.
She now, hangs what, in there. Yeah.
She does. One of the things that's, because this is a Taylor Sheridan, it's a lot about a lot more than the mystery. And in fact, I would say that in some ways, the mystery is the least exciting thing about this movie. It's about white expectations running up against Native American realities. It's about poverty and drug abuse and life on the reservation. It's got all these things swirling around. There were times when I thought he was almost overstating his case, which is where I have some reservations about the movie. But overall, the storytelling is terrific. Some of the performances are great. Gil Birmingham, who played Jeff Bridges' Native American Texas Ranger sidekick in Hell or High Water, plays the father of the dead girl, and he has a breakdown scene, which is devastating.
Let's get to the clip.
Yeah, this is the FBI agent and the tracker talking about why this girl died the way she did.
From Wind River.
Over here, see this one? See how the toes turned out? The front is much deeper than the back. That's how she's running. All right, I'll show you. She ran until she dropped here. See the pool of blood where her face hit the snow. Now it gets 20 below here at night. So if you fill your lungs up with that cold air when you're running, you can freeze them up. Your lungs fill up with blood. You start coughing it up. So wherever she came from, she ran all the way here. Her lungs burst here. She curled up in that tree line and drowned her own blood.
Well, how far do you think someone can run barefoot out here?
Oh, I don't know. How do you gauge someone's will to live, especially in these conditions? But I knew that girl. She's a fighter. So no matter how far you think she ran, I can guarantee you she ran further.
That's from Wind River. If you had to pick just three of the films we talked about today, Steve Walker, you would pick?
There's a lot. Patty Cakes, Columbus, Ingrid Goes West.
Cindy?
Ingrid Goes West, Harold and Lillian, and Maudie, which has been around for a while.
Patty Cakes, Harold and Lillian, and just to be contrary, Brigsby Bear.
And we'll have those up on our website later on today, kcur.org. Everybody, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Y'all have a great weekend. Yeah. We're off Monday for Labor Day, but you can join us on Tuesday for a conversation about alternatives to school suspension with Superintendent Mark Bedell and Mayor Sly James. Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Chris Pruitt, Stephen Steigman, Linda Scher, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Coy Duggar. Have a great 3-day weekend, everybody. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.